Hi there, ladies and gentlemen. This is the Film Room Podcast, and I am your host, Andy Proctor. I'm here with my co-host, Don Olson. In this show, we break down the game of college football and give you a quick listen scouting report to give you everything you'll need to know each week as your favorite college football team buckles up their chin straps. Listen in and level up. The Film Room is your weekly game plan. Let's go ahead and dive in right now into week five.
Before we do that, you sent me this. I know we're already we're long on time, but I do think this is worth mentioning. Yeah. You sent me a screenshot post on X just about something related to the BYU game. I think you should talk about that because I was like, honestly, just like, this is the coolest thing. So
on this last Wednesday, Kansas State quarterback Avery Johnson, I guess there was a principal at his school that is battling stage 4 cancer. And so he announced this last Wednesday that he'd be pledging money for every touchdown that he scores this season to help this high school principal kind of fund his cancer treatment. And unfortunately, Johnson didn't score a single touchdown on Saturday, but his $20,000 goal has already been reached. Why? BYU fans. BYU fans bombarded Avery Johnson with donations after Saturday's win. I don't know what medium they used to do so. If it was like, you know,
I wonder if he's got a Kickstarter sort of or a GoFundMe or something.
Some sort of Kickstarter or something like that, or if it was just Venmo. But $20,000 already just over the weekend from BYU fans. So that's one of those heartwarming stories that you just love to hear it. This is one of the evidences that like sports really, they have the power to bring people together if we will let them.
Yeah, it was pretty funny.
It was a really cool story.
It was really funny, though. I saw a thing either today or yesterday about Avery Johnson, and he was like, playing in Provo was one of the strangest experiences. Because, like, obviously they're like,
really?
Yeah, he was like, because they're like rooting, you know, they're rooting against us. But then all of a sudden, like, sometimes I felt they were like kind of rooting for us too, and I was like, what the heck? Like, I felt like I had support there.
That's really odd.
Even though it was like an away game, really, and I was like, that's pretty funny, man.
That's really odd.
Obviously he's a great kid, and I'm so glad you shared that with me, because that was a really, really cool, heartwarming story in a day and age where we need that put in the forefront more. So
yeah. On the other hand, another tweet in regards to this BYU Kansas State game, I won't go into detail because our podcast is a kid-friendly podcast, but there was a Kansas State fan who made a very interesting bet with himself that he would engage in some sort of activity with a 5-layer bean and cheese burrito from Taco Bell if Kansas State lost that game. And BYU's... Yeah, I'm trying to dance around this a little bit. I just thought it was very funny because BYU's social media team, when they won the game, they posted, you know, a photo of someone scoring a touchdown, and the caption just said "Live Mas," which is Taco Bell's motto, which I thought was very cheeky, very funny. So hands off to not only BYU for winning the game, but for BYU's social media for winning the weekend.
Winning the weekend, that's awesome.
Yeah. So, all right. Let's jump into Utah, Arizona, not Arizona State. This year, Arizona is 2-1 so far, with their two wins coming against New Mexico in a game where they scored 61, but they allowed 39. And then a close game against Northern Arizona, an FCS school, where the game was 22-10. They only won by 12 points. Their one loss that so far this season has come against, guess who? Then-ranked number 14 Kansas State. Last year's contest between Utah and BYU, between Utah and Arizona, ended pretty embarrassingly for Utah as they dropped the game 42-18 in a game where the Utes went down 28-0 by the start of the second quarter. Kyle Whittingham's team couldn't stop the Wildcats through the air as Noah Fifita connected multiple times with Michael Wiley and Tetroya McMillan. I'm probably saying that totally wrong. Tetairoa.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think it's Tetairoa, but you got it. So.
Tetairoa. They call him T-Mac, so that's what I'm going to call him. Wiley's first touchdown reception last year even came on a double pass from Fifita to McMillan to Wiley. So they destroyed us last year. In this year's matchup, the Utes come in on a hot streak, being 4-0 and are ranked number 10 in the AP poll. Whereas Arizona, previously ranked number 20, are searching for redemption after they lost to K-State a couple weeks ago.
I'll be curious to see. So, okay, here's an interesting thing for you. Arizona, I think, plays. So BYU, I think, has a bye week next week. And then Arizona plays BYU the week after that. So we'll have some more crossover there.
Good.
Which is, there's a lot of crossover between a couple of these teams. I think BYU plays Oklahoma State pretty soon after that too. So lots of, lots of Cowboys, Wildcats and Utes and Cougars. But, so real quick, Utah's favored by 5.5 according to MGM. That was yesterday when I looked. I wonder if it, moved, yeah, this will be interesting. So my opinion of the rankings early on is it's like you have a good idea with some of the teams, but it's kind of a crapshoot because it's like you lose once, you're basically out for the most part.
Yeah,
unless you're ranked high enough. You know, like K-State and Oklahoma State are still ranked. But it's just like, I don't know. It's hard to get a good look at what teams are going to be until maybe like week six or seven in terms of the rankings. And so I'll be curious to see where Arizona finishes this year. Just spoiler alert, I don't think they're going to win this game, but, you know, coming two losses, it's like, oh, they're 2-2, they're done. Right. But it's like, hold on. Like, I think that they could be a pretty good 9-3 or maybe 10-2 team. So we'll see.
Much like, you know, unfortunately, I think that the Big 12 has inherited some of the curse of the old Pac-12, which was that we have a lot of teams that are good enough, that are not good enough to make the playoff, but are good enough to ruin the chances of the teams that are good enough to make the playoff.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like it's the Pac-12 circle of suck. Remember that? Where like you can literally draw a circle where like every team in the Pac-12 has beaten somebody and it completes a perfect circle where like no one, you know, escaped the season unscathed.
Yeah. And even though Cal went 2-10, their two wins were against like the two front runners for the Pac-12 that
year. Washington and Oregon. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, I think that Arizona, no matter what happens to them this year, if they win out entirely, or if they only win five more games, like those five games they could win are going to be really big, important games against teams like Utah or Oklahoma State. Just real quick let's start on the offensive side of the ball for Arizona, because I think that's going to be the thing that people are going to want to pay the most attention to in this game. And to understand their offensive strategy, you have to be aware of their personnel first. So let's really quickly go over their quarterback, running back, and receivers. And really, there's only one of each of those to review. Noah Fifita is 5'10", 188. He's been in Arizona for a couple of years now. Interestingly enough, he's only noted as a sophomore. So I wonder if he maybe had a year there where he had an injury, like a medical redshirt, or if he had a year where he didn't play in enough games to count it as a full year and he redshirted. I'm not sure.
I wonder if COVID year had to do with that too.
Oh, that might have been it, COVID year.
If that was his freshman year, then...
Yeah, that would make sense. So he's 63 for 99 this year, which is a 63.6% completion percentage. Not half bad. He's got 863 yards of passing for 5 touchdowns and 3 interceptions. So he's got, you know, a lot of interceptions. And honestly, those 5 of those touchdown passes, 4 of those 5 touchdown passes came against New Mexico.
And all four of them were to McMillan. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. They were all. Yeah. So let's go ahead and talk now about, we'll skip the running backs for right now. Tetairoa McMillan, T-Mac, as he's known. He is 6'5", 212 pounds. So he's super tall. I wouldn't call him a stick. He's not like super skinny, but he's not the biggest and beefiest dude out there. However, he's large, he's tall, he's got great hands, he's fast, he's agile, he's physical. He's hard to bring down, and he's even harder to cover. I mean, this dude is everything you could ever want in a fit, in a receiver, except for maybe 10 or 15 more pounds.
Yeah. So real quick, something to note about just him and his play. So he's been playing with Noah Fifita since middle school.
Really? I did not know that.
Which is wild. I read that on his bio, which is wild. So they've got like a cerebral connection kind of a thing, like just cause they've been playing together for so long. I also wanted to note he had 11 catches for 138 yards against Kansas State. So despite getting, you know,
manhandled,
shut down pretty hard as far as like the score goes, like he still had 140 yards almost. So he's going to get some.
He is honestly the biggest weapon that Arizona has against Utah. And if Utah can't bottle him up, they might very, very well be looking at another big defeat like they did last year. This game, I know a lot of people are kind of down on Arizona right now. Historically speaking, they haven't been as good, but over the last year or two, they have been climbing the ladder for sure, which I'm sure is due to the success they've had with Noah Fifita and T-Mac. I'm just as worried about this game as I am about any other game on the schedule this coming, you know, for the rest of the year. So, I think if you're Utah, you basically, there's two strategies. You either find your biggest, strongest defensive back and you stick him on T-Mac the entire game, or you just double him and try to make someone else beat you.
Yeah.
Which honestly, that someone else could come in the form of number 7, Kwali Conley, which, by the way, I love that name. I think probably obviously our tie to Mike Conley. Mike, we love you. We miss you. Come back to Utah, please.
Oh, yeah.
Kwali Conley, he's 5'10", 209. He's had 250 yards rushing, as well as 69 yards of receiving and 0 fumbles. He's fast. He's got great patience at the line. And then once he finds a hole, you know, boom, he explodes vertically. Utah will have to meet him at the line of scrimmage to have any success in bottling him up. You can't give him any room or he's gone.
Yeah, he's a quick guy. And I mean, he averages 6 per carry, so it's not like,
yeah,
you know, he's eating well, so to speak.
Yeah. So they, you know, they might have a couple different athletes on the field that maybe you'd want to be aware of, and hopefully we're having to learn some new names on, you know, next Monday as we're trying to figure out who it was that Arizona might have had some success with. But by and large, the quarterback Fifita, the running back Conley, T-Mac as a receiver, their entire offense is designed around these three players. They run all sorts of different route combinations, but essentially every route combination is designed around creating space for T-Mac and letting him go to work. I mean, it's a lot of like, you know, let T-Mac run a fade by himself on the boundary. Let's run some clear, you know, run the other receivers. You run a post, you run a streak, and we'll clear out room for T-Mac to run an out route. You know, we'll run like an in route follow where you'll have the inside receiver running in, so that all the linebackers follow that in route, and then T-Mac will run an in just laterally to him, so he's wide open. You know, he'll run a slant where everyone else runs like deep, you know, hitches or things like that. Everything is designed to create space for T-Mac and to give him room to do his thing.
Yeah, well, so that kind of plays into some of the things, some of the notes I had, that Arizona are not afraid to go deep. They send T-Mac on a lot of verticals. I think I saw some deep posts, and then not necessarily T-Mac, but they were not afraid to throw wheel routes either. And clear space for those wheel routes. I saw, you know, that kind of, I can't remember what the name of that concept is, but basically you send a guy on a quick slant and clear out space for the wheel route to be open underneath.
Yeah.
So it's interesting because, I wanted to make this note, as well. Arizona runs a pass play 62% of the time this year.
It's a lot.
Yeah. It's 9th in the country.
Honestly, with a guy like Tetairoa McMillan, I understand why.
Yeah. I mean, so I always talk about how I'm a fan of like spreading the ball around. But at the same time, it's like, get the ball in the hands of your best player. You know what I mean?
Especially when he can do what he can do.
Yeah. He's, like you said, he's shifty. He's quick. He's not like, I mean, he's not a wrecking ball, so to speak, but like, he's not necessarily easily to take down either.
Right.
Yeah. And then I did want to note that Arizona is currently 16th overall in offensive, EPA per play. We talked about EPA per play last week, but basically it measures your likelihood of, scoring points like per play, if that makes sense. And last year they were 7th overall in the same stat. So it's a very good offense. Kansas State happened to hold them to 7, but, I watched highlights of that game a few weeks ago. I'm kind of curious about how they did in the red zone, because it seems like their offense was still kind of clicking. But anyway, so they're going to throw the ball a lot.
And basically, you know, once they've gotten you to back off and dedicate more of your defensive backfield to covering T-Mac, then they bring in some big boys. And they go, you know, pistol formation, which is a shotgun formation where your running back lines up behind your quarterback in shotgun.
Yeah.
Or they go into ace formation, and then they run with Conley and they gash you 6 yards at a time. They run a lot of different kind of basic power and read plays with him. They'll run a read option with Noah Fifita out of the pistol. They'll run a down or power out of the pistol. They'll run inside zone, outside zone, out of the shotgun, or out of the ace formation, which ace formation, for those of you that are new to football, just under center, the quarterback's under center, and you've got a single running back behind. So it seems like it's honestly pretty straightforward, like what they're going to give you when they line up a certain way. You know, if they line up in shotgun, they're probably going to pass most of the time, like you said. Whereas if they line up in a pistol or a single back, they're probably going to run it. And honestly, I kind of respect it, because I think it's this, them challenging you, saying like, yeah, we're not really going to disguise what we're doing, but we don't think you can stop us. So hoping that Morgan Scalley and Utah's defense, which has been performing pretty admirably, except for the last, you know, 5 minutes of the Oklahoma State game, hoping that they can find a way to bottle up these three offensive weapons. And if they do, I think it could be a really great day for them. And if they don't, it might be a battle.
Yeah, so Arizona, they have a cool, like, combo that works, you know? Just as a reference, I'm a gamer, but I'm not like a, I don't play like competitive online games with others. I play one player games, but in a lot of RPGs and stuff, when you create a character, a lot of the time you're, it's just like so lame, but it's they like when you create a character, you usually focus on like a particular strength, and you can create combos with that, and using those combos is how you can like do serious damage, so to speak, like over time or in the moment or quickly, right? And so it just seems like that's their kind of their MO, that's their like preferred fighting style or whatever. Is to just like shred them with T-Mac, and then when you've backed off, give sorry, I blanked on his name and I was looking at something else for a second. So
Quali Conley.
Yeah, Quali Conley. And then let him kind of just get to you on the outside. So another quick note, this is a little bit like it's about the offense, but they don't allow a lot of sacks. I think they have they allow half a sack a game, which it's only 3 games in.
Really?
But either way, yeah, they're good at protecting. But Utah has a good pass rush, so that'll kind of be something to keep an eye on. I think if you give Fifita a lot of time without pressure in the pocket, that could cause issues, especially with with the link he has to T-Mac and how long they played together. You know, I think he's going to know.
And Fifita is not unathletic himself. Like,
yeah, that's a good point as well.
He can do a lot with his feet, and he doesn't need to create much time to find space with T-Mac, but he certainly could if he had to. So
yeah,
we really have to kind of, you know, reel him in if we can and try to get some good, quick, aggressive pressure on him.
Yeah. So that'll be, that'll just be kind of an interesting, like, matchup to watch is, Arizona's pass pro compared to the Utah pass rush.
Utah's pass rush.
Yeah. And then something I wanted to note against Arizona's pass pro. So I think similar to the run game we talked about earlier in the football season about gap and zone run schemes. There are about five different basic passing protection concepts that you can do as an offensive line. I did see a mix of zone, and they call it BOB or Bob. It means big on big. That's basically your man type blocking. I saw mostly zone schemes. They call it a slide, and you know, you kind of slide a certain direction. The offensive line just kind of goes one way or the other, and you pick up who's in your zone. And they seem to protect their quarterback pretty well, and he's evasive enough that he avoids sacks. So,
yeah, I think it's safe to say that Utah's defense will have to be firing on all cylinders from top to bottom in order to be successful this week. So,
yeah, they should be up to the task though, because they're really good.
Yeah. Jumping into Arizona's defensive side of the ball, they're pretty basic. You know, I think that
it's very bread and butter.
From what I've seen in the film, they run a lot of nickel defenses, and we've seen a lot of that so far from a lot of teams this year. 4-2-5 concept. Occasionally, you'll see a 3-3-5 lineup where they walk up a linebacker as kind of a stand up end. But really, you know, you didn't see a lot of their defense in film against New Mexico or against Northern Arizona because their offense was on the field so much. But even in their matchup against Kansas State, where their defense was on the field a lot, you didn't see really anything outside of that. From the film that I was able to watch, they did a lot of cover one with not really any blitzing. They occasionally would do a weak side linebacker blitz. A will linebacker blitz with cover one. I really didn't see any film where they do any cover two or cover three, but you have to imagine they don't just go cover one all the time. Yeah. It's probably just the highlights that were available to us.
Yeah, so. I was going to mention, yeah, they do. I'm so self-conscious about saying, but they do a pretty basic blitz package. They'll fire a linebacker here and there. They clearly struggle with the pass rush. And then let me pull up this page real quick that I had. But Arizona's defensive success rate is not that great. I mean, it's not 110 or anything. It's not in the triple digits, but it's 82 in rush defensive success rate and 82 in dropback pass in the country. So I just think that their defense is not, I'm not sure it's as bad as Oklahoma State's was, but it's not one of their strong suits. So Utah could take, I think Utah's keys to the game are contain them and control the pace of the game.
Yeah. I think this has been a really fun week to prepare for another team defensively, because this is not one of those teams where you're looking a lot at, well, what schemes do they run and where do they put certain personnel? Because, I mean, they have some dangerous personnel that we'll highlight here in a minute, but this is one of those weeks where when you watch film, you're not looking at schemes, you're looking at actually your opponent's tendencies. For example, like their defensive backs, their eyes can get locked into the backfield, and they can get beat on a pass, a play-action pass, right? A run fake. They also tend to get beat a lot on a read option because they'll go right for the running back and the quarterback will pull. Any running back fake QB keepers, the defensive backs, their eyes get locked on the running back and they just go right for him. And they just, they're so aggressive to get downfield and they get undisciplined and they can get beat. Their defensive ends like to fly upfield and they allow for lanes to be created for quarterbacks to scramble. They allow for lanes for things like screen passes or delayed handoffs. A couple of linebackers, they show poor angles when it comes to pass coverage out of the backfield or tight ends that are running like downfield routes like a wheel. You see lots of poor tackling, which is like arm tackling, where they try to tackle up high. They throw shoulders a lot, where then rather than trying to actually, you know, wrap their arms around the person they're trying to tackle, they just kind of huck themselves at the player and hope that their momentum will knock them over. They spend a lot of time trying to strip the ball as opposed to just getting the guy down on the ground. So you can see in the defensive tendencies why their defense struggles the way that they do. And I think these are the types of things that Utah is going to want to take advantage of offensively, especially because their defensive strategy seems to be pretty straightforward.
Yeah, I mean, you covered it. I was just going to say that I remember noticing that their discipline was pretty poor. Like you said, like in terms of like the defensive end will just rush upfield, and then on a read option, the quarterback gives the running back the ball, and boom, you've taken yourself out of the play. Or they, like the linebackers come downhill too fast, or they make poor reads. So it was, I guess I'm just reiterating what you're saying, but I did notice that they seemed to not have very good discipline as individual players. So,
And one other thing, one really cool, important thing that we learned from their film against Kansas State is that their punt return team is susceptible to punt returns for touchdowns.
Yeah.
So anytime, you know, you as a special teams coach, when you see a punt return for a touchdown, you start, you know, salivating a little bit. You start to see, okay, how can we replicate that? So, as far as any personnel to highlight, I think the two people I'll highlight are their two linebackers. They have number 5, Jacob Manu. He's a junior. He leads the defense with 27 tackles. He also has a fumble recovery and one pass deflection. Number 6, his counterpart, Tay Brown. Both boys are about 225, 230 pounds. So they're both pretty heavy. Second leading tackler with 19 tackles and 1 sack. So again, they tend to be the leaders of the defense. It seems like they have more tackles than the rest of the team by a half dozen or a dozen or so. But again, overall, a defense that's pretty undisciplined, and I don't know that for me, at least, that I found it very beneficial to focus on a lot of names on this side of the ball.
Yeah. So I will say as well, just a quick note, Tay Brown played at Hamilton High School in Chandler, Arizona, which is known for being a very good high school,
right,
in terms of football. And I think, if I remember right, I think Dylan Raiola with Nebraska played at Hamilton for a year. So just kind of a fun little fact there. But so I do want to just quickly highlight two positions, two other players on defense. So they have a defensive back, number 2. His name's Traydon Stukes. He's 6'2", 198 pounds. So he's pretty he's a little bit on the taller side, but pretty standard, I think, for a defensive back. He can play 3 different positions, though. So he comes in as a nickel and can kind of do everything. Gotcha. So he's a utility specialist type player, he's a specialist in the sense that he is a jack of all trades. I was going to say that's kind of contrary. Yeah. So he can do a lot of different things, though. And he does have a pick this year and 16 tackles. And then the other guy I wanted to point out was number 92. I think it's Chuba Maye. Could be Chuba. I doubt it, though. But he's 6'2". And
that sounds like a Star Wars thing. Chuba Maye.
Chuba Maye.
Chuba Chupata.
Jabba the Hutt. Chuba Maye. He's 350 pounds. He is a big boy. And
holy,
I noticed
Moses.
Yeah. I noticed that he is not moved super easily. He soaks up a lot of double teams.
Did you say he isn't moved very easily, or he doesn't move very easily?
Maybe a little bit of both, but no.
I feel like both would be appropriate.
I feel like nose tackle. I think he's a nose tackle. I think defensive tackles are quicker and more athletic than we give him credit for sometimes, but Yeah, he's a big boy.
349 pounds. That's gigantic.
Yeah, he's a big guy. So he'll take a lot of double teams.
Ooh, that's like two of me.
That's pretty wild to think about, actually.
Okay. Very good. Any other thoughts or comments about this game? I think that it's going to be an offensive battle. I think that Utah will do an okay job at containing this offense. I think they'll do a better job than they did last year just because they're more prepared and more ready for it. I hope and pray that Utah's offense can come out and be productive. I'm going to say that Utah's going to win this one like 35-31.
Interesting. Okay. I went the other way with it. I think that Utah's defense is going to stifle Arizona. Don't be surprised if Arizona gets a lot of yards, but I think Utah's going mm-hmm. to do well in the defensive red zone and limit them okay. to, the score I picked doesn't totally reflect this, but, limit them to field goals or maybe going for it on fourth down and being able to stop them, or Arizona gets stalled just outside of field goal range, something like that. And then okay. I think Utah's run game might be able to take advantage of this. So I went 27-17 Utah.
Okay. All right. We'll have to take a look and see.
Yeah. Picking Utah.
Let's go ahead and move forward now. BYU Baylor. This should be a little bit a quicker prep because we've already prepped for Baylor this year from Utah. We know that Baylor just came out this week after a heartbreaker against Colorado. I thought that Colorado had no business winning that game. I think everyone who's listening to this podcast knows that I actively root against Colorado and Deion Sanders. And so I'm hoping that Baylor is nice and fired up and ready to go for their attempt at redemption, but I hope that they're stifled this coming week as they host the Cougars at home there in Waco. 2 years ago, BYU and Baylor played. I was fortunate enough to be at that game. I mentioned to you a couple weeks ago that I got Sarah, my University of Utah wife, to go to that game, and she wore a white t-shirt and jeans, which to me counts as blue and white. We were there for the 2002
Atta girl, Sarah.
Double overtime thriller, where BYU won 26-20, in a game that at the beginning of the year was touted as a very important and very awesome win. I think Baylor was like ranked number 9 or something like that. They were ranked at the time, and then they finished that season very low and not ranked at all, and I think they finished that year with maybe somewhere around 500. So it ended up not being as big of a win as everyone thought it should have been, but I think Baylor is probably certainly looking for revenge as they now host BYU in Waco.
Yeah, I think Dave Aranda is pretty desperate too. So just real quick going into this game, Baylor's a 3-point favorite according to MGM. This game is at 9 o'clock. Sorry, it's at 9 o'clock Pacific time. It's at 12 o'clock Eastern time. So,
right.
So offensively, I just want to. So I will do this real quick. If you remember, Daquan Finn was number 7. Was their quarterback. He's really shifty. He was the one that played against Utah. I don't know. I wasn't able to find any update on this. Did you check by chance today if he was getting information on if he was still going to be out or if
I actually haven't seen. Play? Is he out because of injury or out because of poor play?
Injury. He dressed for the last game, but he didn't play. So Sawyer Robertson.
I didn't see that.
So Sawyer Robertson is the other quarterback. At first I was like, oh, he doesn't seem to run it very much. But I looked at the last game. I was like, oh, actually, I think he is okay at running it. He's a little bit bigger and he stepped in as the relief. Right. So I think he still is more of a traditional pocket passer. But I don't know what quarterback we're going to get is what I'm getting at. It might be too early in the week for us to know.
Gotcha.
Because, you know, coaches like to play it close to the chest. But
right.
the next player was tight end number one, Michael Trigg, 6'4", 245. Against Utah, he had 4 catches for 27 yards, but he's supposed to be one of the bigger ones. And then keep an eye out for wide receiver number 34, Josh Cameron. And they have kind of a running back duo that they run with. 35 is Dawson Pendergrass. He's a little bit bigger, more traditional. And then Richard Reese, number 29, is a little bit more of a quick guy.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. They're a good dynamic duo. Like you said, kind of the one, Dawson Pendergrass, number 35, he can be a bit more of a bruiser. He'll get downhill and put his shoulder down. He actually had the longest run against Utah. I don't remember how long it was, but he was able to spring one. So he's not slow. He tends to be more of a power runner versus, like you said, Richard Reese is, he's smaller. He has some speed, but he has a surprising amount of power himself. Not as much of an issue on the offensive side of the ball overall. Generally speaking, they like to use a lot of timing routes with, like you said, you mentioned Michael Trigg. These guys haven't been as much of an issue this year as we thought they might have been, but they still showed promise early in the year. Number 6, Ashton Hawkins, is a small dude. He's 165 pounds. He's 5'10", but don't let his size fool you. He is fast and he can get up. You have to be very sure-footed and play defensive football, very sound defensive football to tackle this dude. Number 11, Keetron Jackson Jr. He had tons of vertical speed. He's able to create lots of space and separation with his footwork off the line. So again, he is a great offensive weapon. I think you have been more a champion of BYU's defense more than anybody this year. I think that optimism should carry over. I think that BYU should be able to bottle up these guys pretty well if they continue to perform with that, you know, top 5, top 6 pass defense that they have.
Yeah, well, you know what's interesting is, so Baylor runs a spread, but I looked and Baylor runs a pass play only 37% of the time. It's good for 121st in the nation. Mm. So I'm going to be interested to see how this game goes, because with BYU's really good pass defense, I imagine they'll try and stick to their identity and run it more.
Well, and
but
I feel like
we'll see. This will be...
Maybe they take advantage of it. This is a principle that you and I learned when we were sophomores and juniors in high school football. You know, typically speaking, you know, we ran the triple option. We ran the ball like, I don't know, 99% of the time. And typically speaking, you think of your splits wanting to be more narrow. And when I say your splits, I mean the spacing that you have between all of your offensive linemen. Because you wouldn't want to create these big wide alleys for defensive players to be able to get into. But what we learned from our head coach and kind of offensive coordinator Brandon Maddich was that when you split out nice and wide, which you see a lot more of these wide splits when it comes to a spread offense or a shotgun offense, you create better angles for blocking. And you'll find that your defensive linemen and your linebackers actually have to split out wider with your offensive line splits in order to cover all of those angles and all of those gaps. So sometimes you can spread out your offensive line splits quite a ways with the spread offense, and it actually creates a lot of really advantageous angles for a running blocking scheme, a zone blocking scheme, or a power blocking scheme, or a gapping scheme. So maybe not the craziest thing to see that Baylor runs a spread, but they run out of the spread more often than they pass.
Yeah, it's they get pretty creative with their run plays. They have some designed QB runs out of an empty set, meaning that there's no running backs in the backfield, so you have 5 receivers and then your quarterback usually in a shotgun. I don't think I've ever seen an empty set not in the shotgun.
Yeah.
I've seen them run a read option with a pulling offensive line. I've seen them run RPOs. They scored against Air Force on an RPO. I saw them run a running back delay.
Yeah. They have that really triple option shark play where they run the triple option, but then as their third option, rather than having a pitch man, they have like a screen pass out of the side, which is really cool.
Yeah. So they have a lot of, speaking of, screens. Maybe you already said this already, but they're not afraid to throw screens and different types of screens too, bubble screens, tunnel screens, that kind of stuff. But they just have some creative stuff that they do.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see how that goes.
Yeah.
I don't really have a whole lot more because, like you said, we've already talked about Baylor. Yeah. But do you have anything else?
Nope. On the defensive side of the ball, they usually stick with a 4-2-5 or a 3-4, which is kind of an interesting changeup. They run a lot of different kind of funky blitzes. They will. I think you have some notes here about some stunts that they'll run with the defensive line.
Yeah. So if just real quick, just as a quick refresher, if you remember, Dave Aranda has a very fluid defense where guys have lots of different responsibilities and ability. I guess abilities and skill sets to do a lot of different things. So they do have some funky blitzes and stunts. I did see. There's a play, a stunt that's called a TNT, and what that means is it's a tackle nose twist. Okay. And so basically, your nose will pull. I can't remember if it's the nose pulls across and then the tackle rolls behind him or if it's the other way around. But they basically twist, and it's designed to confuse the lineman and kind of pull them in opposite directions so that the second guy can get around with nobody coming in. Nobody to block him. But I saw them also do a similar concept with an inside linebacker and a defensive end, where the inside linebacker didn't necessarily blitz outside, but he kind of blitzed up the, I can't remember if it was the B or the C gap, but he blitzed up that gap, and the defensive end basically delayed his twist. And instead of like immediately going, he kind of goes upfield like a normal pass rush and then loops underneath all of a sudden. So they're not afraid to do that kind of stuff. And then the other thing I saw, and I'll probably need some help from you on this, but I saw lots of cover two, lots of two high safety looks. And I think I saw them run a cover two robber.
Yeah. So let's just talk.
So real quick, do you mind describing that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So a robber coverage. Generally speaking, if you see, let's take a 4-2-5 defense. You've got four down defensive linemen, two middle linebackers, and you've got five defensive backs. Typically speaking, you've got two corners on either side, a strong safety and a weak safety, which typically play, 8 to 10 yards off of the ball, kind of in the alley or kind of in the like where the hash marks are. And then you have a free safety that sits up top. So, occasionally, what you'll have in this 4-2-5 is you'll actually have the weak side safety kind of drop down maybe near the same level as the linebackers. And then you'll have a too high safety look where your free safety and your strong safety are kind of sitting on either half of the field. And so you get this too high safety look, which generally speaking will give the offensive side of the ball, the quarterback, the impression that you're probably going to run a cover two, which what that cover two means is that each of those deep safeties will cover deep halves of the field. And that all your remaining defensive players that are in pass coverage, your cornerbacks, your one other safety, and your two linebackers are going to have five men do in smaller zones across the whole field, the first 5 to 15 yards. And so what a robber coverage does is it lines you up like you're looking like a cover two. And then at the snap of the ball, everyone actually reverts into a cover one, which is a man coverage. And so, your cornerbacks will line up against their receivers, the safeties and the linebackers will line up against their tight ends and running backs. And then what happens is the one safety, the free safety, will jump back into a middle kind of deep zone. And then your strong safety will jump down into the middles, like a middle kind of curl zone. And they'll kind of rob the middle of the field. So the quarterback gets a sensation that he's got maybe more room in the middle of the field or maybe some room in the alleys or near the hash marks. And then the coverage just changes at the last moment. And you have that strong safety that robs this coverage underneath. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. I think I read an article, I read an article just on some coverage, and I looked up Cover 2 Robber, and I watched a couple of videos just explaining it and kind of demonstrating what the particularly what that strong safety does when he kind of when he loops under. And it, I figured you know coverage better than I do, so I would just make sure that we got it right. But the reason I bring this, sorry, did you have something else with coverage?
Nope.
So the reason I bring up Cover 2 Robber is Retzloff is prone to a young guy's mistakes still occasionally, you know, in the beginning of the season, it was more prevalent than maybe the last two games that we've seen. But I worry about Baylor being able to get something out of that. So we will see. But I think other than that, defensively, I've got it. I guess we have personnel to go over, but
yeah, I think you've still got some people, you know, as far as defensive backs go, number 8, Caden Jenkins is a cornerback. He's an All-American freshman. He has 3 interceptions.
Yes.
He's important to pay.
Matt Jones. Still leading tackler. Yeah.
From Odessa, Texas. Go Panthers. Right. He's number 2, Matt Jones. He's a senior. He's aggressive downhill. These stats are not updated any longer, but he is kind of the defensive leader. Trying to think of anybody else that would really stand out, but I think generally speaking, we got a good idea who they were a couple weeks ago. You know, their defense it can be fast and aggressive. It can also be very underwhelming. So. I don't know if there
So I don't have any more players. I just remembered a couple of things that I wanted to talk about. So the first one is I will say that Baylor. So this is, you know, this is a couple weeks old now, but Baylor seemed to bite on quite a few of Utah's fakes.
They did, yeah.
Particularly that fake double reverse that I believe Utah scored on or got down to the goal line on. So I kind of am like, here's a little fun little tidbit. Does BYU score on a trick play? Since we don't, they like to do that.
They do like to do that a lot. I think it depends on how well they can run the trick play.
Yeah, that's a really good point. You gotta sell it big time. The other thing I was going to say was that I've seen number 0. I can't remember what the player's name is, but I remember seeing him take some bad steps. I would imagine he's supposed to maintain outside leverage depending on the formation, but I saw a couple of times where he takes a bad step inward and then is immediately disadvantaged and takes himself out of the play. But because that gives the offensive lineman a better angle to block him. But I have also seen him have good discipline, like with the quarterback on a triple option. So I guess what I'm getting at is I don't think it's as like what we were talking about with Arizona, but there is a possibility for BYU to take advantage of a lack of discipline occasionally from Baylor. But I would also imagine that Dave Aranda as a defensive head coach would be on top of that. So,
Well,
I'm not sure, but something to keep an eye on.
So I'm kind of outing myself here as not a very professional sports analyst, but I can use that rationale because I'm not a professional sports analyst. But, you know, you look at how Baylor's defense has performed against teams like Colorado, who, I hate to say it, they're not like on the top of everyone's list to win the Big 12. You look and see how Baylor played against, you know, other teams this year. And I just think that, yes, you want to be aware of the personnel that can give you some trouble. You want to be aware of their tendencies. But I think that overall you can be aware that, you know, Baylor's defense is definitely a weak point. So if BYU can be somewhat productive whatsoever, if they can take care of the football, if Sione Moa can keep on hammering the ball way that he did last week, I think that BYU stands a very good chance in this game.
Yeah, I would imagine BYU goes to, with your defense, goes to control a game. That's what you should. I mean, it might not be pretty, but that's what I would game plan for if I was the coach. But so I don't know about. Did you have anything else? Because I was going to get into my prediction
No, you go ahead.
Okay, so this is a head versus heart. My heart says a tight win. My head says a tight loss, because particularly because of like time of day of the game. BYU's bad on in east of like certain, like in the eastern part of the country, I guess. I guess Waco, Texas is kind of right in the middle, but so my head is kind of like, I could see them falling on their face on this one, but I'm going to go with my heart and I'm going to say BYU wins 17-13 in kind of a cagey game.
I also have a head versus heart pick. I remember the last time that BYU played Baylor and they won this big, cool double overtime game. And they spent the entire week following their social media team. All they could freaking talk about was this win against Baylor. And they were so focused on how high and mighty they were that they just won this game that it didn't feel like they were prepared at all for their next game. And so they got trounced. I don't remember by who, but I remember that the week following Baylor, they got destroyed. So part of me thinks that, oh man, what if they haven't learned their lesson? What if after this win that they're coming off of this high from beating Kansas State?
Got to start somewhere.
Yeah. So, part of me thinks that they won't learn their lesson. They'll lose, you know, worse against Baylor than they should. You know, something like a 24-3 or something like that, 24-7. But also part of me wants to believe that maybe they've gotten better. They've gotten more diligent. They've gotten more, not more diligent, but they've gotten more disciplined. And that they can actually come out and do something good this week against Baylor. I think on a talent level, I think the BYU is the more talented team. I think they're the more disciplined team. I think they're better coached. I think that BYU can come out and win this game. I'm going to say 24-10.
Okay. So there are two things. This is something I'm just kind of coming up with right now, but there are two things I think that can always keep you in a game. And that's a really good quarterback and a really good defense. And BYU has a really good defense. So
that they do.
I feel like BYU can be in the game.
Moderately okay quarterback can stay moderately okay and not moderately terrible, then I think they stand a really good chance in this game. So
yeah, I think watch the turnover margin, which I had a note about BYU's turnover margin. They're plus +4 on the year. They have 8 turnovers for and 4 against. So if you can stay positive,
if they can keep that margin up, I think they'll do okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, just even if it's not crazy, you don't need to have three turnovers this game. But if you don't turn the ball over and you can snag an interception at an opportune moment, then, you know, I think that could be enough. That could be a game changer to help you win the game. So, yeah,
for sure. Okay, we're going to wrap it up here. Thank you guys so much. We're grateful that anyone listens whatsoever. We hope that you guys are able to learn what you want to learn in preparation for these games. We will keep our fingers crossed for the Cougars as they travel to Waco and for the Utes as they host the Arizona Wildcats at home. Thanks for listening in. Have a great week.